Welcome back to the program. I'm Mr. Roger, and this is Illumination. Our guest tonight is Patrick McKay, a law student at Regent University School of Law in Virginia Beach, Virginia. After successfully fighting takedown notices against his own videos on several occasions, he started this site, fairusetube.org, to spread the awareness that is possible to defend your videos from copyright notices on YouTube. Patrick developed a strong interest in copyright issues in college, and after he graduates from law school in 2012, he hopes to pursue a career in copyright and internet law. Fighting to restore a balance to American copyright law which better protects the rights of consumers and amateur creators, and not just the interests of big entertainment corporations. This is a site, fairusetube.org, that is user-generated, where video creators can learn how to protect their rights under the fair use laws in the United States copyright law. If you're a creator whose videos have been blocked by YouTube, please check out the guide to YouTube removals as well as their fair use resource section. Welcome to the program, Patrick.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Tell us a little about your law background and what you're studying and what your goals are and what your passion is.
Well, as you said, this is my second year at Regent. I have one more year left of the program here before I graduate with my law degree and take the bar. And I'm hoping to practice copyright and intellectual property law, especially internet and computer law, which my interest lies pretty much everywhere where law and computers and the internet intersect. And just the potential computers have to influence law and how law interacts with technology.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. That's why I wanted to have you on. We're going to talk about mainly YouTube, if I understand you properly, because I found you on the internet because you had a very good instructional video out there about copyright laws and how to defend your videos when YouTube shuts them down.
Yeah, that's right. I'm an amateur video maker. I like making remix videos primarily that I post on my YouTube channel. I'll take video clips from movies or especially anime video games like the Final Fantasy series, remix them to music, and make what's called anime music videos. And several of those videos are pretty popular. I have some that have over 400,000 views on YouTube.
Wow.
But a couple of years ago, several of my videos started running into copyright problems where, especially this incident in December 2008, when Warner Music had a licensing breakdown with YouTube during their negotiations, and basically YouTube was forced to block thousands of videos using Warner Music. And a couple of my videos got swept up on that, and since I was already interested in copyright law at that point, I knew enough to be able to dispute the copyright block, because I believe my videos are what's called fair use under the law, which is an exception to copyright law. And so I got those videos restored. But a lot of other people aren't very familiar with copyright law. The average YouTube video creator doesn't know enough to be able to dispute copyright notices like that. And so they're just kind of forced to roll over and just let their videos be blocked. And I'm just seeing copyright block so much really beautiful creative expression on the internet. And so I launched a site called fairusetube.org last spring. It's a small website designed to give people tutorials and instructions on how to learn about copyright and YouTube, and if their video qualifies for the fair use exception in copyright law, to be able to dispute copyright notices when their videos are blocked from YouTube and get them restored.
Okay, that leads me to a couple questions, and I know Sam has some questions in the back of her mind. Sam, as you have found out last week, is our virtual assistant. And I thought to myself, instead of Sam putting down the question, she pulled this interview together, we'll just put her on the program and let her pick your brain also. So we're going to kind of, so we're going to gang up on you tonight a little bit, Patrick, but I'm sure as a law student, you can handle it. We're going to prep you for that. But my question is for you. I ran into this problem on YouTube with my videos, so I'm going to take advantage of you tonight. And I know that you have taken a professional oath, even in law school, that you cannot give legal advice or legal comment, but you can explain the law to us the best you can, if that's correct, if I understood you properly.
Yeah, that's right.
From before. Okay. Because a lot of mine got blocked because of the music, and I wondered how others could do videos with that music. And then I found out through YouTube in and of itself that they provide music, which was, if I use it through them, then they run ads through my videos when I embed them or whatever. And of course, I won't get paid for any residual income that comes off that. So I want to address that and tell us a little bit how this affects other video companies. Is this strictly YouTube, or is this pretty much per se for other channels of videos on the internet, such as Vimeo and Medcalf and all those multitudes? The law is pretty much the law.
Yeah. Well, first of all, any use of music in a video is potentially copyright infringing unless you have some sort of permission from the copyright owner. Now, YouTube is really unique because they are such a major video site. They're the dominant video sharing site out there, and they're owned by Google, which is pretty much the biggest online company there is. They've been able to negotiate special deals with record labels to allow users to actually use a lot of music. That's why there aren't a lot more videos on YouTube using music that aren't blocked, is because YouTube has worked out deals that, even though technically YouTube is not responsible for copyright infringement that its users do, it's to their advantage to negotiate deals because, as the intermediary, to allow users to upload videos with music, or else they'd have to block a lot more videos for copyright infringement. And so there's different types of music, and I wish YouTube was a little clearer about what music was authorized. They have some music that you can just go and select with their audio swap program, I think it's called, and just insert that into your video. And that's, they tell you that up front, that it's licensed, but there's a lot of other music that they've still got permission to use, basically, but they don't really tell you what it is. And so you go and upload a video, and the copyright system will flag it, but it won't actually block the video because YouTube's worked out an agreement for it.
Yeah, but by flagging it, other countries can't see it on specific areas. That's the hardest thing for me when I was doing videos, making activist videos, making political statements and that, and I was just dabbling in it until where I got to where I am today. But finding music in the background was very hard. I even went to a website called Reverb Nation and found some artists with non-copyright music. And I even paid an artist to make my own music to play in the background. But the problem is that one song gets pretty old after two or three videos.
Right. Yeah. Patrick, yeah. So if you want to choose music, what are the steps that you use with YouTube? You just, there's not a pre-approved list. Is that correct?
Well, it's kind of hit and miss. There is a pre-approved list, but it's through, at least as far as I understand, it's through this thing called the audio swap thing, which is basically where you can go in and just swap out a video's audio completely, which really doesn't work because once you've uploaded the video to YouTube, like, it's already in its final form, and it would totally mess up the audio track to just swap out video with YouTube's pre-approved sources like that. So I haven't found that feature useful at all. But I guess if you look at that, you can get a list of at least some songs that are licensed. Otherwise, it's just kind of hit and miss. You have to upload a video and see what happens. For my music videos that I make, I rely on the principle of fair use because they're non-commercial, and I don't believe that they harm the market for the original works at all. They're transformative because I'm adding video over the top of them that, especially with music videos, it interprets the original and emphasizes different things about it. And those are all things that I think may qualify for fair use. for something like a radio show like this, that's a commercial use, and that's much less likely to be fair use. And so you pretty much have to go and license it somehow. There are sites out there that provide royalty-free music that you can license. Usually have to pay some sort of one-time fee for that.
And that fee, let me tell you, is outrageous. I looked at it, and the music is far below the quality of what they charge, at least what I have found.
Wow.
Yeah. It depends on the site. There are some ones out there. One excellent option for users like you who are making more commercial-oriented videos, Creative Commons is an organization that was founded by this guy who's pretty much my copyright law hero, named Lawrence Lessig. He's a law professor at Harvard right now, and he formed this organization called Creative Commons, which is almost an alternate type of copyright. It still works under the umbrella of normal American copyright law, but it allows users to, when they copyright something, to specify that you can actually use that music, for example, for to be incorporated in other works, and they specify right there in the terms that you can. And so there are websites that are depositories of Creative Commons licensed music, and a lot of those will let you use songs even for commercial uses, as long as you attribute them to the artist.
Patrick, can you tell me what transformative means?
Transformative is an element of the fair use analysis in copyright law, and it basically means it's something that makes a use more likely to be fair use. And it basically means that you're changing or contributing something new to a use. So, for example, if I take a song and put video clips over it to make a music video, I'm not just copying the song verbatim, even if I might be including the whole song, but I'm overlaying video to it that adds a new message to it and recasts it. Same thing. That's kind of a borderline type of transformativeness. A much more clear example would be the video source in those kind of videos, where I'm taking tiny little clips and rearranging them and mixing them up and making them a whole different order and emphasizing different ones. So it's basically modifying and recasting. The idea of remix is inherently transformative.
Well, I have to admit, going over your website and looking at all your information, I even put your video on my YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
I just favored it and put it in a file for people to see. But again, we want to direct them to your website, so don't be afraid to name that throughout the time you talk. And also, you can go to fatzilla.org and see a write-up on tonight's radio program and find all the links to take you to the websites that we speak of. One of the things I want to bring to our attention today is I asked you a question on your website, and you got back with me the same day, which is totally unheard of.
Yes.
So if you're going into the law field, you're going to have to learn to let people sweat it out and wait and don't call them until they contact you two or three times.
Yeah, it's unheard of, really, Patrick.
I've heard that rumor that lawyers are notoriously bad at getting back to clients. Returning phone calls and stuff.
But I promise Sam I'd stay away from the lawyer jokes tonight. So on your behalf. So Patrick, I respect what you do. Yes, I respect what you do. I see a lot of newscasts from Fox News and Channel 8 News and different news sources, CNN, and people upload them, then they write commentary on them, and I find myself doing a lot of that now, especially the paranormal. And then I make my comments and see things that the experts miss and people are chiming in. How do these laws affect that type of work?
Well, commentary and news reporting are two of the examples in the preamble of the law talking about fair use. And so those are specifically protected uses. And so when you're incorporating something for purpose of comment or news, it's much more likely to be fair use than just copying a TV show verbatim or something like that. But it kind of depends on the specific use. A lot of people just upload verbatim copies of news reports to YouTube. And the law is really unclear on whether that is fair use right now. Because in one sense, you could say it's not actually changing it at all if they're just uploading a short clip.
If you put credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, see, I don't see when it comes out over the airwaves like that and it's news, it becomes public domain, does it not? That was the case. I know you're too young to know Rush Limbaugh, but when he first started, the group was almost a one-hit wonder group for his theme song. Mm-hmm. And they went after him because, of course, makes a lot of money.
He's Rush Limbaugh.
Well, yeah, he's Rush Limbaugh. I'm just Mr. Roger.
Mm-hmm.
But Rush Limbaugh, he's my hero when it comes to the way he built himself up, not his ideas. But he won his case because it was under public domain. It was music that was played over the airways.
Hmm. Well, it depends on what you mean. I'm not familiar with that specific case. In copyright law, public domain has a really specific meaning, which is works that aren't protected by copyright law at all. Today, most works that are actually in the public domain are either ones that were made before the 1920s or have been specifically released into the public domain by the creators. So I don't know exactly the circumstances of that. But
is this grandfathered in back to... You know, you said before 1920?
Well, copyright lasts a specific length of time. When you first create a work, any sort of copyrightable subject matter, a video, a book, music, whatever, the current length of copyright is the life of the creator plus 70 years. And so you can have something for almost 200 years. But copyright wasn't originally that long. The first copyright laws, which in the U.S. were passed pretty much right after the Constitution was passed in the 1790s, the first copyright, the term was only 14 years, and it's been gradually extended over and over again by Congress, most recently in the mid-1990s, up to the current length, and they extended it retroactively to all works pretty much. I forget the exact year. It's sometime in the 1930s. And so anything late 1920s and beyond is most likely under copyright. And anything before 1920 is in the public domain.
So basically, we're going to have to take a station break here in just a minute. But I assume Patrick and Sam, you'll both hang on and come back with us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll be right back after station identification. Welcome back to the Illumination Show. I'm Mr. Roger, and we have with us tonight Patrick McKay and Sam McFarland. Let's continue our discussion. Over the course of the break, something came to mind that I heard in the news, and I'm not too up on it, so I'm going to hit you with this, Patrick. There's something going on in Congress today, Combating Online Infringement Act. Did that pass today? What's that mean for the average person like myself that dabbles in all this? And how does it affect our freedoms of fair use?
This is a bill that just passed out of one of the Senate committees today, and it'll go to the full Senate floor after that. It'll probably have to be reintroduced. It hasn't even been introduced in the House yet, so it'll have to be reintroduced there after the new session of Congress. So it still has a way to go, luckily, but just the fact that it passed out of the committee is concerning, because what this bill would basically do is it allows the Department of Justice to go to a court and get a court order against any website that a court determines is primarily devoted to copyright infringement. And it doesn't even have to be hosting copyright infringement materials itself. It can just link to it or something. And so this bill is targeting things like BitTorrent trackers and file sharing sites like RapidShare or MegaUpload. And the reason this is concerning is because a lot of these sites that this bill would target have perfectly legitimate uses. And the way the bill would work, it would basically yank their domain names, or if the domain name isn't registered in the U.S., it would force U.S. Internet service providers to not resolve their domain name. So when you type in their web address, it just wouldn't come up in your computer. The website would still be there, but it wouldn't come up. And so it sets a really bad precedent for this is the first time the U.S. government has ever attempted to really censor the Internet in this way, especially websites that aren't even necessarily under U.S. control. And it messes with a lot of the fundamental operation of the internet, the way it locates websites. And a lot of these websites wouldn't even have a chance to defend themselves before their domain names are terminated, basically.
So and this could be YouTube or Facebook?
Yeah, it probably wouldn't be them because they have lots of attorneys and they're powerful companies that can defend them. But smaller websites like YouTube was when it first started up, for example, it very well could have been covered under this bill where they can determine that because there's lots of copyright infringing videos hosted on there that it's primarily dedicated to copyright infringement and shut it down. And so it's has a huge potential to violate free speech. And it's not even really an effective bill because there are lots of easy ways around it since the websites still exist. They just don't might not have a domain name, or at least a domain name you can reach from the U.S., but you can still access them if you're determined enough.
Mike, well, it sounds like it's the U.S. trying to force their laws upon the rest of the world, because my concern is, I have two concerns, so I'm going to take a moment here, is my number one concern is that a lot of the things that we're not allowed to do in the U.S. on the internet are being done by American companies and foreign companies because their servers and their companies are overseas. So they come in the U.S. and they can do this stuff. Now, these laws pass, I'm going to be hindered. It's kind of like having my feet tied in the starting blocks while the rest of the world shoots out from among us. And with the economy shifting to the internet, and as global as it is this going to be a hindrance to us here in the U.S.? And then to follow that up, the station that we're on today, Motivational Radio, and I have the pleasure of doing the news for them. So I pull newscasts off, and then I put links to them on a website, and I read bits and pieces of those newscasts, making a Reader's Digest, per se, version of it to give people an update on what's news today. How do these laws affect what I'm doing now and will affect what I'm doing in the future should they come to fruition?
Well, that specific law probably wouldn't affect that too much. It's what this bill would be used to do is to target websites that host lots of copyright infringing videos and stuff, especially like Mega Upload or Rapid Share. They're called digital file lockers. But the problem is, even though a lot of people use these sites to share copyright infringing files, they're also useful for all kinds of other things. Just like if you want to share a bunch of photos or something, or any large file you make, which as people make their own media more and more, you need to be able to share large files. And so the problem is, you have the U.S. government coming in with its really overhanded copyright infringement and censoring these websites that have legitimate uses outside of copyright infringement. And they're not even doing it the right way, really, because these websites would have no chance to defend themselves. And they may not even actually be violating other laws. It's not a crime to be primarily devoted to copyright infringement, to use the words of the statute. It's a crime to contribute to copyright infringement, or and there are certain circumstances where you can be held secondarily liable for it as a service provider. But these websites are ones that mostly don't meet the criteria even in existing law. Mm-hmm. And so this and another thing that's a treaty that's currently being negotiated called the ACTA. It's the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Act, I think is the full name. It's another thing that that the U.S. government is basically trying to force on the rest of the world and make our laws. We currently have some of the strictest copyright laws in the world. They're trying to make our laws apply all over the world, basically, or force other countries to adopt similar laws.
Wow.
And a lot of these are concerning because they include provisions like what our law has, making it illegal to circumvent copy protection on anything. And that's a huge problem for Americans, because if you buy a DVD, it's illegal to circumvent the copyright infringement to rip it to your computer. So you can't even rip DVDs that you own to your computer, which is why we don't have any devices like the iPod for movies, really, because CDs don't have copyright protection or copy protection, so that you can just rip them to your computer without breaking any encryption. With DVDs, they're encrypted, and so you can't rip them without violating the law.
And never mind. I was going to say something, but I won't.
Yeah.
On the grounds it may incriminate me.
I was going to say, were we going to hear somebody say that they had something like that or have done that? No, I'm sure not.
Yeah, Sam, you don't know where you got that movie from last
week.
No,
I don't.
No, I'm kidding there, folks that are out there listening, and Big Brother, if you're listening.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause this is Little Brother and nothing to worry about. But I find this fascinating. It is a step outside the paranormal for what I try to stick with, but I find more and more we need to bring information like this out. We need to stand behind individuals such as yourself that are going to make this part of their life. And we hope that you would keep your enthusiasm and the knowledge that you have and use it to make things better for individuals like myself that are trying to make their way on the Internet. And the Internet being basically so new, and it's still breaking ground and it's growing faster than anyone can keep up with, that it's very important that we're aware of what's happening with the laws and that, because it's going to dictate how we can make a living or use the Internet in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting thing for me as a law student, looking at and beginning a career in law, is just because the Internet is so new, the Internet has been adopted faster than any other major technology that's been invented in the last century, and it's really produced a whole other industrial revolution, basically. Just, the Internet is such a revolutionary technology, it's changing our culture in so many ways, and the law has just been left behind in the dust. And here you have,
they haven't caught up yet.
Yeah,
the law hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah, well, it hasn't really. And it's really interesting because copyright law is premised on the idea that you can control who has access to information. And the Internet is based on unlimited copying of information,
right,
and the easy spreading of information all over the world. And so the two are really contradictory in some aspects, at least.
Well, this may not be your forte, but speaking of that, I look at Facebook, and sometimes I almost drown in a sea of pious platitudes and goodwill, because people copy one another, and they copy sayings of other authors of years gone by, and all these upbeat, what should I call it? Just
like
statements.
Affirmations?
Yeah, affirmations and that. And sometimes it gets just so sicky sweet. It's like having a sweet piece of candy that's too sweet, mm-hmm. and you just, oh, that's enough.
Yeah.
Pious platitudes and mixed metaphors. Mm. And so I assume that these laws will affect something like that too. And a lot of times when you write something of your own and you think it's good, people try to protect it. And I sometimes post that little copyright symbol on there, but that's all it. All it does is look good on there.
Yeah.
There's nothing to stop anybody from copying that.
Yeah.
I found a grammar program on the Internet where I can take an article that I wrote, post it in there, and it would check punctuation, grammar, and it would cross-check your sentences with other publications. And if too many of them come up, they would say you're infringing on copyrights, change it by another percentage.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that? Can you comment on that, or is that a little bit outside of your forte?
No. Well, I think you're getting at kind of what I was talking about before, just the whole cut-and-paste culture of the Internet.
Yes.
It's really interesting how the technology has changed our practices. With literature, like before you had printing presses, in order to copy things, you had monks spending years to like copy out the Bible by hand or something. And then the printing press was developed and you could print books much faster, but then still only people who could afford to buy a printing press could print books. And so it was that way up until the 20th century, or up through the end of the 20th century when then the Internet came out. And then all of a sudden now anyone can be a publisher just in 2 seconds, go up and
right.
send up a blog. And so with the whole world now being publishers and copying someone else's work being as easy as a couple of keystrokes, it's interesting the way it's affected society. And I think society is still in the process of figuring out the ethical rules that will govern that, whether you like how we will define plagiarism and copyright and stuff like that, how much it's okay to copy people like that. And people abuse it, sure. And
but how can you prove the original author? How can you go back and find whoever wrote it first?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a, another thing.
That would be almost, it's a conundrum.
It can sometimes be hard to find the original author to get the permission that would require.
Welcome back to Illumination with your host, Mr. Roger. You've been listening to Patrick McKay and Sam McFarland discussing YouTube copyright laws and how to work around it when your video gets flagged or taken down. We have lost the last 10 minutes of our conversation due to technical difficulties beyond anyone's control.